Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
All right, Bruce, call is going to be in here in just a moment. And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, we're with our speaker, GW. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with American is Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. You're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member, or no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you is be a good attorney. As lead calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. However experienced and intelligent as these thoughts and opinions might be, at the end of the day, they are just still people's opinions. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. If I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that. You have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First on the left is the jurisdictionary course. That is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. Rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules, you need to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process. We're supposed to be known for its national 85% win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. That's usually what it's purchased for anyway. But that's not why we have it up here. The reason we have it up here is once you've gone through the jurisdictionary a couple times and you start on the common law default, you'll see very quickly that it acts as a real-life homework assignment. A lot of the core structures that you learned about in jurisdictionary be acting out now in the common law default process. Of course, given that it is, again, usually used for traffic scenarios, folks find it a lot more palatable for their first time, for their first experience. Both of these items are very affordably priced. Just asking for a small contribution of $250 for the jurisdictionary and $150 for the common law default. So I encourage you to pick those up at your earliest convenience. Now, if we back out of that to the home page, see the little register button. If you haven't already set yourself up with an online account, we encourage you to do so. That is $10 a month for a full membership at Your Remedies in the Law. A lot of wonderful educational features there. Of course, you have full access to all the calls, as well as the unlimited questions and answers with the speakers, as well as many other wonderful features. If that's not an option, though, for you today, we have Freedom is Radio, and we call it broadcasted out over there. Freedom is Radio, 100% free to use. And so you don't have to miss a call again if you don't wish. You've got a little question bar there. We can type in a question, hit submit, it goes out. So you don't get the type of interaction you do by being a full-fledged member, but get some limited interaction with the speaker. All right, on to the next subject. You might have noticed the map of the United States. You see basically every page that we have. That is Grass Fire Communications, formerly Statewide Communications. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another. We based on a local level, based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. That's how it works with this. You have a very easy to use install wizard. I'll put your name in here, click next, your zip code in here, click next. And it's going to have you pick from a long list of topics that your interests are. And then lastly, it's going to have you choose a radius, how far away from home. Do you want to interact with folks? The idea is that maybe you're sitting there one day and you type something in, this happened to me today, or a couple of people come back and they say, well, I don't agree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that might be a truthful statement, but that's really not going to help you much in your education. Maybe the next person comes back and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do. If I was similarly situated, I'd go down to the courthouse. By the way, if you didn't know, every county has a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library, free to the taxpayer. And I'd look up those terms, and then I'd watch this YouTube video. Well, now we're starting to get somewhere. Maybe the next person says, I'll tell you what I do. I go to this website, I purchase this educational program. You see where I'm going with this. That's the idea behind Grass Fire Communications. Put the power of communication, the power of education back in the hands of the common man. Once you've done this, and you're now handling your own due diligence, educating yourself, handling your own affairs, now your own matters. There's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. That's all we're trying to get folks to do with Grass Fire Communications. All right. Many of you have probably noticed now, every time you go to the homepage of your remedy, you're met with that little blue box that pops up, asks if you want to continue on or stay and check out American Food Store in America. The reason that we're doing this, we're trying to get folks to explore. Too often we hear, I wish I'd known about this, or I wish I'd heard of this before. And so we put that up there so folks will see what else we've got available. Of course, we have many different members of the team now at Your Remedy. A lot of different information providers handling a lot of different topics. And then all of Your Remedy is just one of a dozen and a half websites all together makes up Americans Restoring Americans. There's a lot there for you to see. Chances are most of you have not seen anywhere near all that there is to offer. And so next time at your convenience, we encourage you to check that out as well. If you have a concern or a question on whether we have an information provider that would be right for your particular scenario, you can reach us at Your Remedy. You can email me directly, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. Call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250, and somebody will be back with you very shortly. All right, so winding down here, this next portion is called Your Caveat Emptor, or Your Buyer Beware. When you come aboard with a information provider here at Your Remedy, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with that information provider. And they pay for advertising at Your Remedy. That would be a cost to that information provider along with any other costs associated with your particular process or whatever it is that you're undertaking this. That brings us to a bigger point. What is the refund policy or the credit policy at Your Remedy? If there is none. Again, if you were going to have that kind of conversation, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. But as always, you're expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any information provider's time or process. All right, lastly, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conference calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the call over at this time to Mr. Edwards, and he will introduce our speaker for this evening.
Well, thank you, Martin. I appreciate that. Keep an eye out for GW when he calls in, because he gives me 10, 15 minutes to say some things, and I don't want to take any time away from him, or at least no one is here. So what I'd like to start with you all with is we had a good response to my question to my Q&A that I had been posting on Quora, and that you made your thoughts on the call during the Q&A portion, And then some of you wrote me after the call was over and gave a thumbs up. So I thought that would be a good place to start tonight. What I did is I just did a word search on the phrase sovereign citizen, since that's what many people on the Quora community are talking about, and that's what I'll be reading from. So the question, what is the definition of sovereign citizenship? How does one become a sovereign citizen? Where are the origins of sovereign citizenship? And who is, was its promoter or proponent? And my reply was, the origin of what you erroneously refer to as a sovereign citizen was the Treaty of Paris, or Treaty of Peace, wherein King George III referred to his former colonists as his peer, making King George III the first proponent. Visit and read Once We Were Colonists.com. Let's see. Why do people calling themselves sovereign citizens consider themselves beyond the normal methods of the legal system? What exactly has given them this motivation to act the way they do within the law enforcement? And I just wrote in, read Once We Were Colonists.com, and then you may inform me of your answer. Are sovereign citizens, which are sometimes anarchists, dangerous to citizens in some way, like if they disagree with them? Well, firstly, my reply, firstly, sovereign citizen is a made-up term designed to demonize Americans who, either by birthright or by a state citizenship, are disparaged and slandered, much like when the IRS speaks of, quote, income tax protesters, end quote. There are three definitions of the United States, and this applies to land or the people or persons, depending. One, it may be merely the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to that of other sovereigns in the family of nations. This reference, that was a quote. This reference is referring to we the people, quoting Scott v. Sanford, quote, who were at the time of the adoption of the Constitution recognized as citizens in the several states, became also citizens of this new political body, but none other. It was formed by them and for them and their posterity, but for no one else. And the personal rights and privileges guaranteed to citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace those only who were then members of the several state communities, or who should afterwards, by birthright or otherwise, become members according to the provisions of the Constitution and the principles upon which it was founded, end quote. Number two, the second definition of the United States. It may designate the territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends. End quote. These persons are United States citizens and, quote, are classified as property and franchises of the federal government as an individual entity, end quote. Reference the 14th Amendment with a democratic form of government. Have you ever heard it said, we must make this world safe for democracy? The third definition. It may be the collective names of the states which are united by and under the Constitution. These people are quoting actually an older version of a W-8 Ben form that the IRS supplies. Quote, Union State Citizen, end quote. Or the term American National is found under 8 U.S.C. 1502, with a guaranteed Republican form of government. Ever since the Civil War has been identified by the second definition, this is an assertion. You asserted that anyone who exercises their constitutional rights over others' civil rights are somehow sometimes deemed, quote, anarchists, dangerous to citizens in some way, like if they disagree with them, end quote. In every group of people, regardless of whatever divisions you make, may be, quote, sometimes anarchists, dangerous to citizens in some way, like if they disagree with them, end quote. I came across these statistics just yesterday. In 2018, from 2018 through 2021, the homicide death rate per 100,000 were 1.5 for Asians, 2.9 for whites, 6.0 for Hispanics, 12.5 for American Indians, and 28.7 for Americans of African descent. So this begs the question as a parallel to your question posted to me. Are black citizens, which are sometimes anarchist, dangerous, or more likely to kill the citizens in some way, like if they disagree with them? Your question, I believe, sir, is dishonorable. Next question. Why do people keep believing in sovereign citizen arguments despite the complete track record of failure with SOVCITs encountering the criminal, sovereign citizens encountering the criminal and civil law enforcement function of the government? My response was belief versus fact. There is the land and the people of the several, quote, states in perpetual union, end quote, that came into existence with the Articles of Confederation by their respective state citizens who enjoy rights and immunities from the Almighty One, as differentiated from the people's creation, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America in Congress, July 4, 1776, the U.S. Constitution, found in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, where this bits of land, quote, 10 miles within the seat of power, all territories, possessions, and enclaves, end quote, is under the sole delegated authority of the people to the Congress, where these citizens only receive one right, privileges, and immunities from the Congress. Although the U.S. Constitution never explicitly mentions the divine by name, but references the divine as, quote, nature's God, end quote, quote, creator, end quote, quote, supreme judge, end quote, and, quote, divine providence, end quote. However, the same cannot be said of the nation's state's constitutions. In fact, Yahuwah, or the divine name, is mentioned at least once in each of the 50 state constitutions and nearly 200 times overall, according to a Pew Research Center analysis. These territorial citizens literally exist at the pleasure of the Congress, just as the colonists existed in England before our Declaration of Independence. You know who these territorial citizens are by the prima facie evidence of them asking the Congress, or a derivative of the Congress, be that the city, county, or state, for permission to do a given thing, such as to drive, or to hunt, or to fish, or to pilot a boat, or to an airplane, or get married. Look at these court cases and tell me what you think. Everything you think of what relates to freedom is ensconced in these specific and unique people. The co-sovereignty of the American people was first recognized by the High Court in this case. So much for the idea of sovereign citizen. In Chisholm X. Rel. versus Georgia, the Supreme Court of the United States, 2 U.S. 419, 440, 1793, U.S. Lexus 249, 2nd Dallas 419, quote, to the Constitution of the United States, the term sovereign is totally unknown. There's but one place where it could have been used with propriety, but even in that place it would not, perhaps, have comported with the delicacy of those who ordained and established the Constitution. They might have announced themselves sovereign people of the United States, but serenely conscious of the fact, they avoided the ostentatious declaration, end quote. Quote, as the state has claimed precedence of the people, so in the same inverted course of things, the government has often claimed precedence of the state. And to this perversion, in the second degree, many of the volumes of confusion concerning sovereignty owe their existence, end quote. Sovereignty was defined, and those who are sovereign were identified by this case, and it is still standing law on sovereignty today. The Supreme Court in Dred Scott versus John F. A. Sanford, this is 60 U.S. 393. This decision is in 1857, so it was, what, 5 years before the Civil War, where the High Court stated in relevant part, quote, the words people of the United States and citizens are synonymous terms, mean the same thing. They both describe the political body who, according to our Republican institutions, form the sovereignty and who hold the power and conduct the government through their representatives. They are what we familiarly call the sovereign people. And every citizen is one of these people and a constituent member of this sovereignty. It is true, every person and every class and description of persons who were at the time of the adoption of the Constitution recognized as citizens in the several states became also citizens of this new political body, but none other. It was formed by them and for them and their posterity, but for no one else. And the personal rights and privileges guaranteed to citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace those only who were then members of the several state communities, or who should afterwards, by birthright or otherwise, meaning naturalization, become members according to the provisions of the Constitution and the principles upon which it was founded, end quote. You'll find further astonishing revelations within the slaughterhouse cases and the legal tender cases. Then consider the reader should note that this definition has since been removed. It does not appear in Black's Law 8th edition and thereafter. So how do the above definitions play out with relationship to those south of Canada and north of Mexico? Well, we said as it was. It may be merely the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to that of other sovereigns in the family of nations. This would be anyone who can trace their lineage in the public record back to the 1750s, the 1770s, and all the way up to 1789. If you can, then you, friends, are really one of the sovereign people by birthright. After that, then you're pegged in as a territorial citizen. Number two, it may designate the territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends. Well, this is those people that naturalized in, came from someplace else, or were former slaves and chose not to become state citizens but seek the protection of federal government becoming federal citizens. Or third, it may be the collective names of the states which are united by and under the Constitution. I like to say, myself personally, I'm a Floridian, having domicile in Florida, one of the Union states in perpetual union, quoting the Articles of Confederation. So anyone who asks you, are you a United States citizen, you must always require the one asking the question to stipulate which of these definitions to which they're in reference to. Otherwise, you're going to be suckered in to whatever domicile whatever one they want to tell you it is. Next question. Martin, you got GW here yet?
I just came on.
Yes.
Hey, welcome, brother. I can't read and look at the board at the same time. I didn't want to take up any of your time on the call tonight. I'm just reading through some Quora communications that I have where we're talking about, somebody asks about sovereign citizens. The next one was, what are sovereign citizens and why are they taken seriously? And why aren't they taken seriously in America? So we just get great questions there. So let me turn the call over to you, please. And maybe you could share with us what interesting things happened to you this week.
Yeah, so a number of interesting things.
Learning another physical lesson. I converted over to eating on a totally different type of program, which is called carnivore. And after about 1 month and about 3 weeks, I think I'm a little over 3 weeks now, and it's been really good. I mean, just really great mental clarity and losing some weight, body's reshaping. You're just eating meat. And no sugar, no carbs, no greens, no fruits. Then I decided on Saturday I could maybe just cheat a little bit and maybe have some watermelon. A good friend of mine bought some seeded watermelon, and I thought, well, that would be really good. So I ate some of that, and the next day I'm nearly crippled. Just barely walk. That was Sunday. That was yesterday. And watermelon has always been a problem as far as I start to eat it, my throat would swell up a little bit, but I love it so much. Well, I guess it really causes major inflammation in my body because just like down the lower part of my spine, just all jacked up, man. Just like I've learned a big lesson. Can't have watermelon anymore. So anyway, I'm kind of I'm waddling around the house right now. Stayed home all day, and but it's getting a lot of stuff done, so I'm not complaining. Bad, and learning more lessons about taking people through the process of correcting their status. Just had a guy go through today, and actually he and his kids, one girl under age, and a son that's of the age of majority. So they all went and did theirs, and got a little message from them, which is kind of cool. They went through it, and they went through the FAST process. They went through Houston, and I think it was Houston. Anyway, we have three new passports. There were no questions, and our old passports were only supporting documents we submitted. The clerk noticed but barely looked at our affidavits and ran very quickly through the DS-11, making some items at the top of the form and filling in the blanks reserved for the SOS, Secretary of State's office, at the bottom of the form. The first clerk mentioned that the second clerk would help us with our status. That was the word she used. After signing the DS-11 at our 9:30 meeting, we returned it at 1:30 and received the passports and passport cards around an hour later. It was eerily smooth. And that's what we hope to accomplish with anybody that we're getting through. I had a lady reach out to me today that was really disturbed because she went through and decided to do the older process, which is go to the post office and get it done. And they sent her back this letter. They got all of her stuff, been delayed a long time, and they sent her a letter saying, hey, we can only issue U.S. passports. And they're starting to send those letters out to people that go through the slower process now. You know, we never used to get those letters before in years past. Now, this year, they've been doing it. And they're just kind of, it's really a misguide, the letter. It's kind of scary for them. And the only things that I pretty much at this point without, you know, digging into Brother John's time too much and trying to do counter letters and all that kind of stuff is just to basically say, you know, just please submit the U.S. passport and return all my information, you know, to me and get the U.S. passport and then go through the FAST passport process again. But, I mean, doing it through the FAST passport process where it's a one-day situation. And we're doing that in just – the reason we're doing the one-day situation is we know from being told this at
some pretty high levels that everything's uploaded in real time, and it's a little bit different handling of your information and everything else when we go to an actual Secretary of State's office. And that there's some other things that are required that we have to do in order to do that, but we'll coach you through that, you know, whole process. It's not something I want to get on, you know, and talk about openly on the line. But, you know, when you're going through the process, we coach you all through that, and it's not a problem. And we have victory every time with that process, and they don't seem to be doing the things that they're doing now with the slow going to the post office, trying to get, you know, get it done that way. So that's been a little bit of, you know, a couple things on the status side. Also, one of my clients got that I have that is part of very politically active. She's very active with the state legislature here and with a lot of legislatures here because she's a lobbyist. And one of the good ones, she got pulled over and the cop didn't even care. Didn't even use a DPS, you know, officer. Didn't even care to run her passport card. And so you get that every once in a while. And so, you got a ticket the other day. And, boy, was there just a bunch of different interesting information that they put down on the actual ticket. And so, we've put together a very strong, very, something that they're not going to be able to overcome. It's called a presumptive letter that goes in that has all the information. It actually has the information about, Wayne Stump, which is one of our senators in Arizona who basically put out the information to the state legislature way back when. I'm not sure how many years this goes back, but about people's right to travel. Okay, it was a very beautiful letter. It just so happens that this young gal that's the lobbyist interfaces with the person that at the head of the legislature there that Wayne Stump was interacting with to get this information to the state legislature. And so anyway, we put together a pretty powerful presumptive letter that really is taking the DPS to task over the fact that they issued a ticket and violated her rights, you know, under it was deprivation of rights under color of law, and the fact that they made the cop the liable party in this whole process. So, anyway, we're working with that, and think it's something that is going to be very useful for anybody else that ends up running afoul, getting a officer, whoever, that getting an officer that just plows through, because he just basically told her, I don't care about what you say your rights are. I don't care about your travel card. He went and filled in, he found her information and filled it in on the ticket. So even though she never gave him a license, he went and looked it up, cross-referenced stuff in his system, but he bypassed what the Secretary of State said. So he's going to be held accountable for that, and he wants to go, and if he wants to take it as far as he can take it, and we're going to help her do that. And so when we get to a point where we get it kind of perfected, we'll share the process with you, okay? So that you can kind of pile on and maybe help anybody else that that needs that that service also, you know, that's had their status corrected but still is being maliciously prosecuted or whatever. So, you there, Michael? Or did you hear me?
I stay muted while you're talking so that I don't, my background noise and things like that don't interfere with you. Yeah. Just a heads up, I was in a conference with John earlier today regarding one of his students and deprivation. He's producing right now a deprivation of rights under color of law lawsuit against the not only the police but the prosecutor as well.
Uh-huh. Good deal.
So.
Well, I was saying, did you hear what I was saying?
Yeah, I heard everything. I'd like a copy of that letter when you complete it. I'd love a copy of that when you complete it.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. We'll do that. So,
all right. Would you like to go over to Q&A now?
Sure. That sounds good.
All right. So our first question is from Ed in Beavers Falls, Pennsylvania. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand and get in a line behind Ed here. Those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll notice on the center right of your monitor the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. That's empty. Left-click inside of it, type away your comment or question. Underneath and outside of that rectangle laying on its side, you'll find a place to put your name, some other information, and hit submit. When you hit submit, it pops up on my end, and I know to lend my voice to your comment or question. So go ahead, Ed. What you got on your mind?
I'm interested in that too, GW. I still don't have my passport, and I definitely want to get it. I have another court hearing coming up. I had a court hearing over my dog. My dog bit another dog, and got us both in trouble. And I came afoul of Pennsylvania's civil laws, and the judge didn't pay any attention at all to my affidavit, and he says, well, Pennsylvania gave him his jurisdiction.
No.
La-di-da. How did Pennsylvania give his jurisdiction over me? I don't know. He gave me a choice of going on to common pleas court, and I got to get better versed in this stuff than what I am. But I'm wanting to go, but this time I want to have my passport and passport card before I go to common pleas court so that there can be something. I thought the affidavit would be objective enough, but I authored it, and the State Department never rebutted it, so yeah. But apparently they don't always believe that affidavits are truth unless they're rebutted. And he didn't say anything in rebuttal, this judge. Magistrate. It's a magistrate court. And so it is. I think he would maybe pay a little more attention to the U.S. passport, the card. But again, I would need... From what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, I would need someone in that court to scan that strip on it. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know how easy or hard that is to get them to do that or not, because that's where the information's at.
Well, I don't want to, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
I don't want to break in on anybody else's territory here.
Yeah, I know.
That,
I'm just saying, I'll make
John,
it a one-day process.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great to get the one-day fast passport process when you do it. But on the other hand, with the court stuff, you know, I know that John has a certain way of doing things. I realize that, and he's the expert in his realm, especially in the statutory arena and going into the public side. We've been doing things on the private side and having tremendous success. And the guy that really, you know, helping and kind of teaching me is, you know, beat it into my head, you know, constantly saying, your remedy is not in the public, DW. Your remedy is in the private. And I was like, okay, all right. I believe you. So being able to, we just did it with another one of my clients that's in Missouri. And this was on a situation with OSHA, where OSHA was attacking them, a business, and threatening to shut it down, basically. And there's about 40 people that work there, you know, 40 people that have a livelihood, and their families have a livelihood because they work there. And this agent for OSHA was just really, really very, very belligerent. Said they were going to get a warrant and the whole bit. And he had called me up the same day and asked what he could do. And said, well, said, you know, the only thing I really know of is a good friend of mine that does these, what's called a presumptive letter on the private side, which has a lot of the information and also has a number of what you would call negative averments that are put in there. And it's just it's a type of document that they just can't overcome it, because it's in the truth. And it does call them out and talk about their oath and the fact that they're public servants, and, you know, goes into a bunch of different things about, you know, deprivation of rights under color of the law, and it just identifies all those things, and then they're given so many days to rebut it with specificity, and if they don't, you know, it stands as fact and truth. And
yep.
So
agreement.
Getting some of these things done in a timely fashion and getting it delivered properly, okay, is part of the process, because you're doing it administratively, and you're giving, you know, they gave notice, you're now giving notice, and most of the time we just see that they just fall away, they just go silent, there's other levels that it can be taken above that, okay, if they keep on bulldozing through, which include getting it adjudicated through a, you know, the already defaulted process, okay, they already defaulted on it, getting it adjudicated through like an arbitrator that's recognized, as far as not a ruling on who's guilty, who's not, but just not ruling on basically was the process and procedure followed properly, with the right timing given, with you know, sending it out through the registered or certified mail, through the notary, things like this. And then if they keep on bowling forward from there, there is another group of people that we're working with that have had 9 separate wins with using TICTA and OFAC, or what you call DOFAC, in the process. And that is through the Treasury. And that's the Department of the Treasury. TICTA is the ones that actually go after it, but OFAC, DOFAC, with a D on the front of OFAC, is the organization within the Treasury that actually does kind of the audit. It'd be kind of like bringing out the insurance adjusters. Okay, they're kind of like the insurance adjuster. They go and, you know, go through all their examinations first, and then they hand it over to their whoever's going to be signing the check or whatever and executing, you know, the proper authority. Well, DOFAC's kind of like the examiners, and then they hand it over to their other people. And this group has the black SUVs, and they wear the suits and have the guns, and they actually have the power to go in and literally arrest and shut down courts. And we only were apprised of this process because of some very close contact of mine that has been that's seen 9 of these done successfully. And the interesting part of it is that it has only been available to do this process with the Treasury since 2018, when Donald Trump signed 2 separate executive orders. And those executive orders had to do with not only child sex trafficking and human sex trafficking, but he also put in to those executive orders the words trafficking of persons. And so, not to get too crazy with this conversation right now, but when you talk about trafficking of persons, you're really literally talking about the definition in the law of person. Okay, that's the all caps name. All right, it could be a corporation, it could be a human being, okay, that's represented by the all caps name. It could be anything that qualifies as a person, but trafficking of that person is something that they can be charged with, and there's special instruments that have to be filled out. They're from the Treasury, then they go and do their process. But that's only, you know, once you've really exhausted every other means, and they're still rolling forward. So.
That sounds interesting, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, so we're going through that process. I think they've with the OSHA situation, they've gone silent. OSHA itself with any interaction. So we haven't taken it to the next level. It would only be taken to the next level if they're, you know, showing up and getting on the property. But in the meantime, all of their staff and their management has been they've been mentored up on the use of a PSQ, okay, otherwise known as I'm trying to get the exact words now, it's questionnaire for public service, public servant questionnaire. And so, you know, the property is now posted, okay, with the right type of postings out there, that they're entering, you know, private property by invitation only. If you're a public servant, you will be asked to fill out a public servant questionnaire. So they step through that, through the gate, and it's all posted. They know that they're going to have to be filling out a public servant questionnaire. And if they refuse to do that, ooh, you know, those things, when they get into a court situation, it's not good. So anyway, you know, there's always things that can be done. There's always position and posturing that and some training that needs to be done with, you know, in certain situations like that, so that even, you know, the employees and manager and people like that can be so disposed to be able to request very strongly that these people comply with their wishes.
I could get that.
there you go.
Put a gate up on the end of my driveway and live in my castle.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, sorry to hear about your situation with your dog.
Oh, we're working on it.
Okay.
My situation in court was complicated by the fact that I'm relearning the use of MS Word. It's been, the last version I had was 2013, and
yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
La-di-da. And by the way, I love watermelon too. And it makes me sick. I get all bloated up from it. Swelled up. Looks like I swallowed the whole watermelon.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's it for me.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2 to raise your hand. Or if you're on the Freedom's Radio side, type your question in the question bar this time and click submit. All right, next up we've got
David R. David R. in Austin. Go ahead, David R. Martin, can you make clear his voice for him? My computer just crashed.
Yep. 1 second here. Do apologize. There we go.
And Michael G.W.
Go ahead, David R.
There he is.
You got me?
Yeah, you're on now.
Hey, good. Hey, I had talked with y'all. I've been on probably 75 of your calls the past 2 years. Three or four weeks ago, I talked to you about what I had discovered on being able to get affirmation of corrective status through NexusLexis. I am not able to do that yet. I've got to wait a couple more months. And y'all had mentioned y'all were going to get with John, and that GW, you and Michael may get yours run by John. I'd also mentioned that LexisNexis offers a free review, whatever they call it, once a year, kind of like the credit bureau does. Has either one of y'all done that yet?
No, I don't have the time or the will. If somebody else wants to do that, I'd love to see somebody do that. I do have somebody that sent me their FOIA. Okay, back. Got a few of them now, and you look at the FOIA, and basically with the FOIA request, it just gives you all the information that is supposedly, you know, with your application, okay? But it never says, there's nothing on the FOIA that says, that is checked, that says, this person is now certified as a national. Instead of a U.S. citizen. None of that appears. I don't know if you see anything like that, Dave. But
I haven't seen it yet, even though I've requested it. They said it'd take 12 to 16 weeks, and so
yeah.
I'll wait on that. And I'm too early to request LexisNexis. If I need to go to the military, maybe I will. What are your thoughts?
Hey, you need to go to the military. You got some connections in the military, and, you know, you can have them try to, you know, run it if they feel, you know, safe and comfortable with you, whatever. Go for it. It's just that with the FOIAs, okay, I never see anything on there that indicates that
the status is anything, you know, it doesn't show anything like that. See, the thing that I keep talking about is that the only place that it really matters is when they run it and they can see the screen, okay,
right,
that the cop can get, that the person at the airport come through customs can see, those kind of things. But they're never going to print that up for you and let you see that. See, this is where it's kind of a little bit of a little bit of faith.
Well, I'm not concerned at all about the reality of it. I'm just trying to get confirmation through one of three or four different methods, and I'm working on three of them right now. And if I can cross the goal line, I'll certainly share that with you guys, and I appreciate everything you do.
Yeah, I do want to comment.
You too, Dave.
Yeah, I do want to comment, David R., that the front burners on the team have been just overflowing with critical priorities. Even today, I was supposed to have a meeting with you between 3 and 4 o'clock or 4 or 5 o'clock, and I just been slammed. I had to force a call off so I could do tonight's call, and I got one right after this is over. And I apologize for missing today. I'll try again tomorrow. But
no problem.
Been, we haven't had the time to deal with that, and believe me, it is on the list, the to-do list. We want to do that.
No problem. Here to help you. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Yeah, thank you, David.
All right. Did Ernest get taken care of?
Not yet.
All right. Go ahead, Ernest. You've been unmuted.
Yeah. Good evening. I don't know. Can you hear me okay?
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, great. just a couple of comments, really. The gentleman with the dog, there's three golden rules in life that not too many people realize, but with the dog, really, I just would have made a written inquiry to the owner. I mean, obviously you're talking about damage, so whatever kind of damage it is, it's up to us to remedy it here in America. And a lot of what I try to do is about American rule of law, and I just keep saying it over and over, because whenever I have to use the word screwed over by these ill actors in the government, they're recklessly disregarding American rule of law. And what is that? We just put this together, that everybody talks about checks and balances, and I'm wondering if anybody really knows what the checks and balances are, because those checks and balances, to me, are the 56 titles of law. And that's how, by the checks and the balances, we keep these separation of powers. That's what's happening at the local and the county level in these local courts, like the gentleman, the judge just disregarded the affidavit. Well, right there, you should have called. That's foreign rule of law. Under American rule of law, that's my affidavit, and it will be submitted. And you have to stand on that. So all of that comes from what we believe. We just, another one of the things we stumbled across was, you know, we're under American rule of law here in America, and all these usurpers, if you will, that have gotten into our court system and done what they've done to it, that's what we have to take back. I really would like to comment on the traffic ticket issue. That's what we're consulting with a lot of people on here, and it's called faulty traffic infractions. And here, I think I mentioned it in one of our calls. I don't know if that was, it might have been last week, but there's two laws you need to know, and you can jot these two laws down. I'll give them to you in a second. And if you wanted to do a word search, it would be this, 311, that would be 311, 311 Connecticut State Troopers fired. And that just happened last month. And for what? For issuing faulty traffic infractions. And I mentioned on the call, I've been consulting. I'm sorry?
I said great.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And this one episode is what we all need to grab and use, because this is us getting our country back. And also, I spoke about, you. Someone mentioned Donald Trump signing an executive order. The other one was the Due Process Protection Act in New York in 2020, which really gives us our courts back. But let me just stick with this for a moment. The two laws you need to know about any traffic infraction is the criminal code of the checks and the balances that we say are the 56 titles of the law. And people just need to know that there's one title. There's thousands of codes inside of each title that you can just pluck out and apply. And, you know, it has to apply. But these two titles are 18 U.S.C. 2721. And that's the DPPA, called the Driver's Privacy Protection Act. That's in 1994. So 18 U.S.C. 2721 DPPA, 1994. That one we'll go into in just 1 second. And the one that goes with that is the most important one of all. That's 18 U.S.C. 2725, definitions. And that is probably one of the most powerful codes you'll ever use, 18 U.S.C. 2725. So 2721 is the Driver's Privacy Protection Act, and 2725 is definitions. And what the definitions is this. All your records, your driving record, your Social Security, every single record, your medical records, like if they want to know if you've gotten the shot, you know, the jab, all of that is four words. Highly restricted personal information. This is federal code, federal law that fits you as what? A United States individual. That's what you are if you have a birth certificate, and there's all power is in that. So that's where I come from, copyright, trademark, and patent law. And that's my angle in. But under 2725, why is that important? Under the Driver's Privacy Protection Act, it's this. And this is how they busted all these state troopers. And like the cop that gave you the ticket or the ticket issue, all you need to do is pull it out and cite his law, his oath. Sir, do you have an oath? You have signed it to uphold federal law. Well, here it is, sir. 18 U.S.C. 2721, the Driver's Privacy Protection Act. It came out in 1994, and you all had 3 years to comply, 1997. What year is this? And you're still doing this? That's
good.
It's really simple. What that is this. What it means is if you get pulled over and a cop asks you for your license, you should just pull it out and say, yeah, I have a license, but that's my contract with the state. You're a state employee, and you can't be a witness against the state, but that's okay. So, yeah, I have my license, and you can't touch it because of 182721. If he takes your license and runs it through the DMV, and gives you a ticket like you've been issued, that's a declaration of mixed war. It's a war rant because he's a state employee. But what is he really doing? He misuses your information. What are you talking about? 2725 says my photograph, which is on my license, my social, my medical records, everything on that license is highly restricted personal information. And subsection 5, there's only 5 sections to it, states you cannot see it, share it, or view it without my express written consent. And that law right there is what makes this country a consent-to-suit country. So going back to the other issues, you just write them letters. You make what's known as an inquiry. It's a lawful, it's called a proper lawful written inquiry, and you write them a letter. Did I harm you? Did I hurt you? Whatever you want to do, you make an inquiry. And the easiest way is to get these people into default, much like these lawyers do. And once you get them into default, you say, listen, I gave you 7 days to answer my inquiry. You don't have it. You are now in default. I'm going to give you 72 hours. That's 3 days to, ready for these words, cure the discrepancy. That's what they've caused. The default is a discrepancy. Why? By law, lawyers have to respond to you. Anybody has to respond to you if you mail them a letter. It's not serving them properly. That's all BS. Don't even listen to that, because anybody that serves you has to have a bond. You should look that up, process servers' bonds. They have to be bonded for the amount of damage they can cause you by whatever document they're handing you. So So 2721 and 2725 really gives us our country back. And listen, you were going around the tact of going about traveling. This has nothing whatsoever to do with your being able to travel freely. This has everything to do with that cop misuse your highly restricted personal information. Get it straight.
I like it.
Stay right on that. And that is federal law that he violated because he signed an oath to uphold federal law, Title 18, at the local level, federal law at the local level. You can cite the law, which are those 56 codes, and you do not have to give it to him. Now, listen, these guys get crazy, and I got to tell you something. In the last few years, 4,000 people, unarmed people, have been shot and killed at unlawful traffic stops. Some of these guys are crazy. And what is it? They're unfit to serve. That's it. They're just unfit to serve because they signed an oath, and that was to God in heaven. They swore to God in heaven. And what is our national motto? But Title 36 USC 302 is "In God We Trust." So these people are signing these oaths, and they're violating them. And so when you do go after them, and you can, you should, and they're committing what's known as unauthorized practice of law. Why? This is really crucial. When you get pulled over, no matter whatever happens, that cop has got to have cause. And we spoke about this a little bit. You have to have four causes. It's not just show cause. You have to show cause. You have to show justifiable cause. You have to show probable cause. And you have to have one little piece of paper, and we can get it to you. It's called an affidavit of probable cause. That officer has to have all of that before he switches on the lights. Why? Because those are emergency lights. And if you look at New York VAT traffic law, a traffic law has three parts to it. First part is it's not a crime. The second part is it's never meant to penalize or punish. And the third part is it does not diminish your credibility as a witness. You can take that from New York, which is the cradle of law. All law comes from New York, and that's New York VAT 155. Okay? So if a traffic infraction is not a crime, why did he turn his lights on? That's a $400 ticket. It's called unlawful misuse of emergency equipment. Why is that? Because he doesn't have cause. He has no reason to turn that on. But once he did, he created, now this is crucial, he does something called calumny. He's a calumniator. He doesn't have the probable cause from the judge. You got to have that from a judge for him to turn those lights on to go after you because you committed a crime if he turned those lights on. So calumny, and we got this to Donald Trump's people, his lawyers, a couple of times. Calumny is very simple, and here's the words. To frame a man in a position of disrepute. Think about that. You get those lights turned on. Oh, my God. You gas. You pull over. All the cars are looking at you. It's like, I'm not a criminal. It's a traffic infraction, if anything, which is not a crime. So shut your lights off. And right there is where they escalate. And what you have to do is to de-escalate. And sometimes you got to go along with this. You got to take the ticket. But if they do, he hands you a declaration of mixed war. Why? All cops, judges, lawyers, clerks, all of them, they're state employees. And the law is a state employee may not be a witness against the state. So that cop cannot, and that's why they busted all the state troopers. And there's a gentleman named Steve Leto. He's a lawyer, I think, in the Midwest, and he did like a 9-minute video, which we grabbed, and we want to turn this thing into like a little tutorial. But he said so many great things in this little video, several of which was, didn't these state troopers think that somebody was going to look at their computer input stuff? And right at the last second, what they did was they turned it around. They tried to make this whole thing racist because 311 cops after midnight, that's when they would put the tickets in and say that we busted black people when they didn't. It was the day after. After 12 o'clock is the day after they gave that ticket out. So at 12:01, it's a new day. They said, oh, these are all black people. And now that's going to get them more time and more money. So it's pretty amazing that these people didn't check their computer inputs. Why? On that ticket are sets of numbers. And those sets of numbers go to insurance policies and bonds, and that cop is a liability. For what? For causing such calamity. But the point of everything is this, and this is what really was the shocking part, if you think about this. State troopers, 311 of them, wrote 322,750 tickets. There's 1,500
wow.
state troopers in Connecticut. Think of what that did to communities, to people's driving records, to their bank accounts, to their jobs. They are roiling our towns, everything. Now add the sheriffs do the same damn thing, and so do the local police. And this is how we've been dismantled from the inside. All the while, I say to everybody, the state troopers are solely responsible for our town, our state borders. They're wide open. All these people are here, and they can't be under U.S. Code 1323, unlawful entry. You carry that with you. I don't know what the title is, but it's USC 1323, unlawful entry. And you print that out and carry it with you. And it says these people that are all here, what we're doing, we just realized they're housing standing armies. These people are now standing armies inside of our country, and these phone companies are giving them telephones. Because 1323, all these police officers should be keeping these people off of our buses, off of our trains, out of our cabs, out of our airplanes. They cannot be in contact with anything because they don't have four documents. Four. They need a passport. They need a birth certificate. They need a visa, and they do have to have a thumbprint, a seal. And they don't have that. Therefore, they're terrorists, and they're here, and they're standing armies. And we're trying to get Eric Adams arrested. We're trying to get Hochul arrested because they're in violation of U.S. Code 1323. You can't put these people on a bus. The bus driver can't allow them to be on there. So our police are solely responsible. I'm sorry. I come from a long line of police, and I'm the grandson of a great chief of police. And I go about – I'm a law-abiding citizen no matter what. And this is not right because it's – We cannot be forced to put up the money for this. That's the point, and that's what's ruining us from the inside. These police and the sheriffs and the state troopers, they're just taking our towns apart. And there's laws in there in place to stop that, and they're not being abided by. So,
all right.
And the whole thing, by the way, just the whole thing is your ticket, by the way, finally, is called a Brady violation. That's what this is because there's no evidence of any damage that you did.
Hmm. Very good, Ernest. Very, very, well,
thank
very
you.
Good.
Indeed.
It was wonderful.
All right, Martin,
very
you want
refreshing.
To bring us home?
I'm sorry?
I said, do you want to bring us home? Anyone else on the call? Questions? If
no.
Tell us about tomorrow night and Wednesday night, and we'll go from there. Thank
all
you,
right,
GW. Do you have any comments you want to make before we close out tonight?
No comments other than, that was a very good succinct overview by Ernest on a number
mm-hmm.
of issues. Some of them, which I've heard before, he just gave a whole bunch of new golden nuggets for me.
Yes.
And, really, really, really appreciate that. Really appreciate that.
And Ernest, just as an FYI, I've got your material in front of John. As soon as we can get some time in there, we want to go over it and talk with you privately.
And Michael, would you send me a recording? Would you send me a link to the recording of this tonight?
Sure.
Great. Thank you, brother.
Mm-hmm. Martin?
Join us again tomorrow night. Same time, same place. We'll be having our Tuesday night call with Brother John about litigation, point of the spear. Wednesday, we'll be back again with Slevin with
seas. And then, of course, Thursday is a recording. What is Thursday on, Mr. Edwards?
Home foreclosure.
Home foreclosures. All right. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much. And until next time, good evening and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.